The skyline of Barcelona, once again the perfect setting for the latest edition of ESPN FC as we continue our countdown to our Clásico. And look at this, like a rose between two thorns. Luis Garcia is here, as is Sid Lowe and Ali Moreno. Later on in the show, we're going back to Bristol to join Kay, Shaka, Nadim and Frank. We'll be looking ahead to Liverpool against Manchester United in the Premier League. But we kick things off, of course, with a big game on Sunday, the first Clásico of the season. Barca taking on Real Madrid at the Camp Nou. You've played in one of these, Luis.
Only one, I have to say, yeah. I would love to say that a few more, but yeah, it was only one and not the best one.
What's it like, though, the build-up? Like throughout the week, this is the biggest game of your career. You're looking ahead to it. Like, how did you feel?
Nervous, excited. To be honest, I'm born here. Not far away from here. And honestly, it was one of the most special moments for me because when you grow up, you wanna play for Barcelona, of course. You wanna play in a competition like La Liga, and also you wanna play this game, the El Clásico. Everybody wants to watch this game around the world. And building up to that game was a very special moment. It was tough. Nervous, excitement, but at the end, I enjoyed every single minute of it.
Yeah, I bet. And I bet you've got people coming out, family members, Everyone. Friends, going, you really need to win this one. Yeah, thanks.
But not only the 2 days before, maybe 2 weeks before, everybody's telling you, listen, on the street, listen, you're going to play against Real Madrid. Remember that you have to win it. Remember that you have to play in 2 weeks' time. So at the end, it's a build-up from the whole city that stops just towards the game.
Do you think, as you say, because you're a Barcelona boy, there was kind of more pressure than the foreign players coming in?
I guess you know what it is or what it means, because at the end, from outside, I had the chance of playing big games like this one out abroad and for teams that you didn't feel exactly what it is, that rivalry between the team. But this one is the one that I grew up following. And of course, I knew that being a Barcelona player or Barcelona supporter from when I was 5 years old, I knew the importance that it is, not only for the club and the players, but also for the whole city.
Of course, Barcelona going into this game, despite the fact that they've won two in a row, things are a complete mess. If they get a result against Real Madrid, could that prove to be the turning point of the season?
It's a tough point.
You can say
point.
No.
It's a tough,
you can
yeah,
say no.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to say that, yeah, it's a turning point and suddenly they're going to start playing an amazing way and they're going to start winning games. But it is a very competitive league this year. It's not easy to win everywhere that you go. And it's not like the old days where Barcelona was winning 4 or 5 every single weekend. Yeah. And it's tough at the moment. It's a transition moment for Barcelona. But it's true that always winning against Real Madrid give you an extra boost. It's going to get closer. It's going to be near the top four spot once again, feeling that they are back into the game. And that's something very important, together with the players they are recovering from injuries.
It's kind of an indictment, isn't it? Mm. About how far Barcelona have fallen. But despite the fact, we were speculating the fact that they could go and they could thrash Real Madrid. Even after that, though, there won't be kind of that sense of relief, because it would be like, well, what about the next game? What about the one after that?
This team is playing this season almost as if they're expecting that something's going to go wrong at some point. And it's not only the team, but it's also the fans. It's like, we want to get excited, but I don't know how excited we're going to get. Because you don't want to bring yourself to the point to where you fully and truly believe that this team has indeed turned the corner. And the reason you say that is because in the examinations that we have had of Barcelona in top matchups this season, they have failed and failed miserably. And so you have to, as a fan, you have this excitement of El Clásico and what it would mean to beat Real Madrid. But you also know that this team is capable of failing in the big moments as well. So you come into this game with that dichotomy. I want to support my team. It is critical that I support my team. But do I truly believe in my team? Not so much. They haven't really given you a reason to believe.
If you make the comparison, say, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Ronald Koeman at the moment, Solskjaer keeps pulling these rabbits out of the hat. When under pressure, it just seems that he gets the results. Could this prove to be Koeman's Solskjaer moment?
Now, look, we're coming back to the same thing, which is that there's a recognition of a reality beyond the result. So there's a recognition that no matter what happens in this, there are bigger problems. Now, that shifted a little bit in the last 2 or 3 weeks. It shifted in what Koeman is saying. His narrative is different to what it was, in part, of course, because he knows it has to be. Because the president got on his back about the fact that he was talking about, you know, you can't expect miracles in the Champions League. You can't expect us to win La Liga, to finish in a high position would be a success. But this comes back to that same phrase from Piqué after the Bayern Munich game. It's like, hey,
right,
this is what it is. And I think that reality lies beneath everything. So however good it gets, there will always be that thing, that part of Barca fans thinking, yeah, but it's not quite that good, is it?
How does all the noise around the manager affect the dressing room?
I guess that you try to be away from all the noise, all the people, all the speculation that is around the team and the club, because all the problems that they had for the past 6 months, 1 year. But always something that affects you when the things are going wrong, because when everything is going well and people is talking about something bad outside, but it's fine, you're winning, you're getting results, the team is playing well, so it doesn't matter. But it's true that when the things are going wrong, you start thinking about, what is this? Why we are not doing the right things? Why are not we playing the way that we want to play, the way we train? So at the end, it's a little bit confusing when you are into the field. And yeah, it could affect at certain points. I don't think that enough to change things or enough to lose games, but it's true that affects a little bit.
In the end, I think as a player, you concentrate on the things that you can control.
Right.
Yeah.
On the issues that you can control. And what you can control is your preparation. What you can control is the way that you focus for the game. And you are now thinking about the things that you have to do in order to get a result. But it's impossible because these players are not robots. These players are human. And they live in this city and they read the papers and they hear the news and they go out to restaurants. And then all of a sudden, the rhetoric of the team and of Ronald Koeman is not a positive one. And so, of course, it affects you. And so while you want to be this guy that somehow just kind of laser focus on the game and I don't hear everything that is going on outside, you hear it.
Right.
The important thing is, do you let it affect you? And that is the part that Barcelona fans and Barcelona players are going to struggle with. Do you let the negativity around Ronald Koeman affect your individual performance? That in itself is a challenge.
What about, I ask this as someone who hasn't played. What about the negativity? You talk about the negativity around Ronald Koeman. What about the negativity from Ronald Koeman? Mm. So when those players hear Koeman say, well, you can't expect us to win much. Other players thinking, oh, well, thanks a lot, boss. Or, I mean, does it work like that? I mean, what's the mindset?
Well, it's not the support that you would want from your coach. You don't want your manager to come out in the media and actually say in a press conference, look, don't expect us to win games. Wait a minute, you're talking about us, right? We should be capable of winning this game. So a guy like, say, for example, Ricky Puig, who is underused by Ronald Koeman, in my opinion, here's Ronald Koeman speak about the team in the way that he does and say, well, if these guys are not good enough, then why am I not on the field? Why don't I get an opportunity? And to me, you lose a connection with the players when you start saying things like, don't expect too much from us. I would rather our manager go out there and say the things that he wants to say in order to support the group first and then deal with whatever expectations people may have outside the club. I don't think that's the way to approach it. And I think that was indeed a mistake from Ronald Koeman in saying, don't expect that of this
group. Ali, but do you think that maybe that's something that he wanted to do just to put out the pressure from the players? Or he was talked before and saying, listen, guys, we are going to send this message outside to try to release a little bit of the pressure that we all are receiving at the moment. Because it's true that as a player, I don't want to hear that from my manager. I don't want to go on the training to someone that thinks that we are not good enough to win games. So sometimes I think that the managers, and we've seen it so many times with the Simeone likes to play those mind games with the media and journalists and send that message. Let's throw it away. Or Mourinho is an expert trying to put the pressure out of the players and bring it up on his back. So not sure if that's something that they talk before and say, listen, let's do this and let's see how it goes.
It wouldn't be so much an issue for me if Ronald Koeman didn't believe that his team is not good enough. And I think Ronald Koeman believes that his team is not good enough, that he sees what he has available, that he sees what the expectations are, and the player personnel does not match the expectations. And that's when I think it's a problem, because now you're saying to the world, hey, you guys think these guys are not good enough? I don't think they're good enough. That's not the way to go.
It's been a very negative start to this show, I feel, about Barcelona. I kind of feel we need to... It's a beautiful evening here.
Saying what Barcelona fans and Barcelona players are saying. Enough of the negativity. Let's talk about how good this is.
So what I want to focus on, if Barcelona win this game on Sunday, how do they do it, Luis? What's the key to them getting the victory?
For me, it's try to don't lose the position on the field. I'm being very worried about this Barcelona because the talent is over there. I mean, I know that they got enough quality to win any game, and I'm truly believe that they can win any game. doing the right things in the right places. But I think sometimes that they just want to do so many things right. that they are running all around, moving all every movements and moving around the field is good because you allow players to receive the ball in different positions. But there is sometimes that I think that Barcelona players at the moment they feel that they need to do an extra, and you can see the young running around on one side and then Gavi in the other side, and then suddenly there is no one on the left side, and then they recover, everybody's doing transition because they have to do that quick transition at the back, and there is a line of seven players online, no one in second line to try to receive that second ball. So at certain points I think that they want to do a lot
right.
and they lose the focus of the real plan that they got from the very beginning. So
how do you deal with that though? Because if you're running around, as you say, there's ill discipline, this is something that's very difficult to control in these sort of moments, in these pressure matches. Mm.
And one of the questions that has come up after the recent success from the Spanish national team is, how come Busquets looks so good for Spain
right.
and not for Barcelona?
Yep.
How come Gavi looks great for Spain?
I ask those questions, maybe not in that way.
Well, okay. Good question, by the way, Dan. And so you have to go back to a very simple concept, and that is structure of the team. You don't see a structure with Barcelona at times. And to your point, and to your very good question, here's the thing. When you get in a moment of pressure, that's when the cracks in the foundation and the structure of a team start showing up. Because that's when you get out of control. Now you're not doing the things that are natural to you, natural to the group. Now you're just doing your own thing because you're trying to resolve a problem here, and you don't care so much about what's going on in other parts of the field. So you go out and press. You get out of position. Now Busquets is having to chase out of position as well. Now it's a 1v1 situation in transition, and then good luck, Barcelona. So the key for Barcelona is going to be discipline, structure, discipline in terms of what they do defensively, and then the quality of the possession. That is, it isn't just a possession that is through the midfield, it's a possession that actually ends up with a final product, with something that threatens Real Madrid and forces Real Madrid to defend. You do that, you give yourself a chance.
Quick, there are two teams, of course, playing on Sunday. We've focused completely in front of me on Barcelona. Real Madrid come into this game. They're far from their best. You know, we were talking about the Real Madrid of the past, but they do have Karim Benzema and Vinicius Jr. who are coming here full of confidence.
Yeah, definitely. Good result midweek. They give you a lot of confidence, but once again, it's similar to what Barcelona started this season. I mean, you can have a fantastic game and suddenly you face Espanyol and you lose 2-1, and you play Villarreal and you struggle to get a result. So at the end, it's similar to Barcelona, but they got this key player from Karim Benzema that is doing everything. I mean, he's the one who breaks every single defense, the one who creates chances. He should have maybe in the other day's game, maybe he scored only one goal, but gave 3 assists, or everything started from him. And when you got a play like this one, it's a big relief, because you always know that with Kroos and Modric in the middle, you always going to have chances to keep the ball, to move the game, to slow it down or speed it up if you want it. But up front, you need someone who can kill the game in every single second. And at the moment, Real Madrid has got that.
What's your objective prediction for this, Luis Garcia?
Objective, yes.
Yes. Yes, objective. Let me repeat that.
Atletico Madrid.
For me, I think it is going straight away for a draw.
Yeah,
that's it, the easy one. Yeah. In my heart, I have to say that I want Barcelona to win.
Well, yes, we know you want them to win.
Hence the Ali objective part.
Ali wants his hair back.
Yeah, but it's not happening.
There'll be more from the boys, as always, on Extra Time.
It's not happening
for City
either.
You. Wow!
That was out of nowhere.
We were quiet.
That was honest. Be sure to check out Extra Time over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Well, while Dan and the team are enjoying things in Barcelona, Shaka and I have decided to stay back here in Bristol, Connecticut, and hold down the fort.
Yes.
We're getting some hand to do that.
Somebody has
with Frank Leboeuf. And Nadim Anua now joining us because we have some Premier League to talk about. Friday night action, Arsenal taking on Aston Villa. And it was an Arsenal win as well. Goals from Thomas Partey, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Emil Smith-Rowe. Just the one goal for Villa in this one. But Arsenal moved to ninth with a 10th point from their last four home games. Perhaps they are turning a corner. Frank, it was a good performance all round from Arteta's men, wasn't it?
It was a very good performance. I was very pleased the way they played, especially the first half, the rhythm that they gave, and some players like Tavares that I didn't know, playing on the left side, you know, bringing something very, very good for the squad. They play as a team. They created chances. They believed on the way they wanted to play, and they did what they had to do. They put the rhythm, and we didn't see the villains for the first half, and it was quite a nightmare for Martinez coming back home.
Do you think they're turning a corner, Shaka?
You know, it's always difficult to judge whether Arsenal are turning a corner or not, because we've seen this before, most notably against Spurs, and then all of a sudden things kind of come apart at the seams and needed a last minute equaliser against a Crystal Palace who are surprising many, myself included. Truth is, Arsenal have now won 7 on the spin in all competitions, and while their position in the table still isn't one that is great or promises a lot, this kind of form could see them climb the table. And as excited as no losses in the last 7 is, I still don't think that this is a great Arsenal team. I still don't think this is an Arsenal team that will challenge top 4. But right now, and with a run of games to go that they can get points from, maybe you see confidence start to improve. You see the performance start to improve. Certainly they have the foundations, at the very least, to start to make a push up the table.
The suggestion is that Smith Rowe wasn't even fully fit, but did want to play. Nadim, he got man of the match after this game. Would you agree with that after his performance?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think he's probably symptomatic of the sort of the positive feeling around Arsenal at this moment in time. You know, you have players who potentially aren't 100% fit, but they're just desperate to be out there, desperate to play with that badge, desperate to go and try and affect the game in a positive manner. And, you know, as he was rewarded with his goal today, but he makes the crowd feel excited. I think him playing well, people like Saka as well, like, that's a more dynamic Arsenal. And that's the Arsenal that we want to see. That's the Arsenal that we like to see. And as a consequence, the games do tend to get better. And, you know, to give them credit today, I thought they were really good. I think, in fairness, looking back at the Crystal Palace game, as was the case with Frank, I think they sort of surprised us a little bit in terms of how they played. But for Arsenal, you know, we've got this sort of tendency to want to downplay their successes. But when things aren't going well, I think we overplay some of their failures. So give them credit. They're on a good run of form. They're looking very confident. There's a good vibe at that stadium. And I'll be honest, it's been a long time since that's been the case.
A good vibe, good run of form, good enough to make the top 4. Good vibe, good run of form, good enough to make the top 4. Nadim, no. So not that great then, Nadim, huh?
Yeah, I'm just listen, Arsenal, it's a different Arsenal team now. I think as far as the top 4 goes, you know, they're two separate conversations that happen now. Mm-hmm. I think there are 4 teams, you know, Manchester United, Chelsea, Liverpool and Man City, who have aspirations to win the Premier League. And I think those are the 4 sides who will probably end up finishing in the top 4. So when we look at Arsenal, the quest to finish in the top 4, well, if the standard is you have to try and win the league, then you're going to think they're going to come up short. But, you know, we've got a big game this weekend, so let's see how that goes.
Yeah, interesting times in the Premier League. Obviously, the massive game coming up this weekend. Taking a look here, Manchester United taking on Liverpool at Old Trafford. Here are the odds ahead of it. Liverpool coming into it as favourites, but obviously Manchester United did have that emphatic win, that comeback win against Atalanta in the Champions League this week. Anyway, ahead of this one, Klopp has reignited the penalty row. Here's what he had to say.
In between what I said and when Ole said what he said, they had 5 penalties and we had 2? No. Still. Even. And we all know, come on, that the refs are not... We cannot influence refs by things like that. But having the amount of penalties that United had before that, was quite exceptional. They are good, they go in the box, they have these kind of situations. But we have them as well and got not even the similar amount of penalties. That's how, that's just facts. Who cares? It's done.
Frank, what do you think of this? This is him once again saying that Manchester United receive an exceptional amount of penalties.
Well, you know, and oops, he did it again. That would be the song for him. I mean, that's as much as I appreciate him, it's getting boring, really. I mean, it can happen, and it's true. It's been the truth. I've done that. You know, we saw Alex Ferguson. It was the Fergie time. They got penalties. They got, something from the referees. But I think it's not the case this season. So far, I think Liverpool got one penalty and so did Manchester United. So it's not really the point right now. And I think he wants to make a statement, but that statement, you know, is lasting for too long for me. And he wants to just put a pressure on the referees to make sure that everything's going to be perfect from the referees. But I don't think it's really needed.
Might this be a bad time to bring this up, Nadim, just giving Manchester United even more incentive to try and get the result?
I think if you're not already motivated for this game, then I don't think you deserve to be there. So I think I know it's frustrating to hear him talk like this, but it's also pretty funny because, you know, when you look at it, like one thing that he has on his side, he's just got the numbers there, but he's also got the fact that most people don't remember some of the appeals which were turned down during that time. So I guess it's just maybe him poking a bit of fun at United and maybe trying to get them riled up. But at the end of the day, hopefully it makes for a better game and, you know, I'm more than ready for it.
Shaka, you're going for a Liverpool win. Why?
Yeah. I think Liverpool are the better of the two teams, even going into Old Trafford right now. And while Manchester United are on an emotional high after that 3-2 win against Atalanta coming from behind, and Liverpool maybe left, despite the similarity in result, left with a few more questions with how they gave up a two-goal lead against Atletico Madrid. Pound for pound, player for player, Liverpool are a better team. And we can make a lot about the centre-back partnership and how poor they were in particular against Atletico Madrid, how few clean sheets Liverpool have managed to keep with Van Dijk and Matip as appearing. But you look at Manchester United, Varane will still be out. They don't fill me with confidence at the back at all. And if you're asking who scores more goals, whose strike forces is more potent, it's Liverpool's.
It looks as though Frank Leboeuf's confident with both defences. I don't think you were watching the Champions League on either side this week, hey, Frank? Nil-nil.
Well, you know, that's just a feeling. We're talking about football. It's not giving a prediction. It's pretty hard. And I don't know, it's just a feeling. I feel that, yeah, I agree with Shaka. Liverpool is a better team. But after saying that, you know, the spirit is in Manchester United dressing room right now. You know, they came back at Old Trafford. It was a fantastic spirit from the fans as well. So I'm expecting a great atmosphere. So I'm expecting a fight. And in terms of fight, you never know what's going to happen. And after all, Manchester United plays at home. So they will have to give something out of it. And it can be a nil-nil. Let's see. Let's see how it works, you know. Lindelof was the best defender, you know, since he substituted Varane. So I can trust the defence of Manchester United. I hope that I'm wrong, really. I hope that it will be goals, but I hope just for a draw.
So do we hope that you're wrong. We want to be entertained with this one. Nadim, you're the only one going for a Manchester United win. Would you like to tell us why?
Yes, I would like to tell you why before people get too heated. So, obviously as well, I hope that Frank is wrong because I'm trying to spend some time watching this game and I don't really want to see a nil-nil. But in this particular game, it's at Old Trafford and it feels strange that Man United kind of feel like the underdog. It's sort of carrying on from Shaka's point. Liverpool are in a better form, it feels like. So United taking the mantle of the underdog at home with their crowd will bring out a certain type of performance in them, which is more about keeping the crowd on their side, going and getting at Liverpool. And it's such a big fixture in itself that I think that will probably suit them on this particular occasion. So I don't think they're going to outplay Liverpool or anything like that. But I think it's a day for them to be able to show the sort of desire that's needed to win this type of football match. And as a consequence, I think they're going to do it. And don't get me wrong, as somebody who prefers Man City, I don't really want them to do it. But I think they can do it. And showing these goals now, it's not helping my confidence. But, you know, we shall see. We shall see what happens. Thanks for the setup, Mr. Producer Man. Thank you very much for this.
Yeah, this was the loss to Leicester. How bad were the defence in that game for Manchester United?
They were. Manchester United's defence has not been good at all for quite some time. And in particular against Leicester City, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer offered the excuse of Harry Maguire being injured, yet Maguire played for 90 minutes and then played against Atalanta. And while he came in for some criticism against Atalanta, I don't think he was nearly as bad and certainly not at fault in the way many were pointing towards. But that being said, this is a United team that have so many question marks about them defensively. I think they're good going forward, but at the back and in particular through the middle, they just leave you scratching your head and questioning them and their pedigree sometimes, which is not something you can afford to have out on the park with Liverpool's front three, especially with Mo Salah and everything we've been seeing about Mo Salah over recent weeks, which I won't go into repeating. But he has to be looking forward to coming up against Manchester United's rear guard as much as any in the league right now.
And yet, all this week and a few weeks previous to it, Frank, there's been a lot of talk about how Ole Gunnar Solskjaer manages to get the right result when he needs to. And that's been the feeling here on this panel. What do you think?
Yeah, he does well when he's really at the edge and when everybody thinks he's at the end of the world for him. And it's what happened to Atalanta. Is it because of him or because of maybe Ronaldo, maybe the reaction of the players? I don't know. But he seems to be a lucky guy or fortunate person right now. And I think it's why, you know, I don't see Manchester United losing, because it seems to be that the players, they're backing him up. And so they're going to give everything. And it's a big game to give everything at Old Trafford for a team who plays at home. So it's why I don't see Manchester United losing, because I don't see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer being kicked out because of that game.
Nadim, there was a feeling, even though they won that game, Liverpool against Atleti midweek in the Champions League, that there were a lot of concerns and some worry. Stevie Nicol himself said that he was worried about them after seeing it. Do you think it was just a wobble, or should it be a cause for concern?
I think it depends how you want to view it, because, you know, they've conceded a couple of goals to City, a couple to Atletico, obviously three against Brentford. But before that, they did look quite solid, but it was the nature of some of those opportunities that Atletico were having within that game. But it felt like at times Liverpool were being carved open, and it seems crazy considering they already had a lead in the match, and it felt like they could have controlled it from that point forward. So I can see some of the concerns that he does have there, but playing at the Metropolitano is, like, without a doubt, probably one of the toughest places to play in European football. And Atletico were always going to react based on the poor start that they had. So I think as far as Liverpool go, they know they can do better. And thankfully, they've got a challenge of having to be at their best if they want to try and contain this Manchester United side with one of the greatest goal scorers that's ever played the game. So I wouldn't see it as being too much of a concern, because I doubt that there are a bunch of players who will make mistakes in games and then just move on to the next and disregard it. I think they'll react. And I think as a consequence, they'll probably be better this weekend.
A big game this weekend coming up on Sunday at Old Trafford. Manchester United taking on Liverpool. Just one of the games in the Premier League that is on tap. Obviously, it's already underway with Arsenal's win over Aston Villa. West Ham taking on Tottenham as well. Definitely one to look out for. Chelsea against Norwich too.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Look, I'm thinking of a moon pun, but I can't quite get there with reference to what's going on in El Clasico. Yeah, thanks for all your help.
That is your job, Dan.
Well, I just saw the moon.
What else do you
do? They just put the moon up, and I didn't have time.
Didn't put the moon up. The moon was already there. this isn't the Truman Show.
I know Truman Show. That's what I was thinking. Right, let's talk about Luis Garcia and his time in El Clasico. We'll take it back to 2003. You're only in Clasico in which you started. Obviously, Barcelona losing that game by 2-1. What were your memories of it?
Not the best ones.
Because you got pulled at halftime.
Yeah, halftime.
Oh, outstanding performance, please.
Yeah, it wasn't the best one. Honestly, that week was a build-up because we were trying to do something specific for that game.
Right.
So Frank Reich had decided that we weren't going to play with two white men, and I was meant to play for at least 45 minutes in a position right in the middle between the central midfielder and the striker, and not in the wide areas, just in the middle, in the pockets. Try to get the pockets next to Real Madrid players. And at the end, it didn't work. The first half wasn't the best one. In the second half, they did a great job. I mean, they were fantastic on the counterattacks, and with Ronaldo in the team, it's always difficult to face. So, yeah, 45 minutes for me was enough. I went to have a shower, but at the end, a bad result. Bad result for us.
You mentioned Ronaldo, Beckham, Raul, Figo, Zidane, and of course Ronaldo, all in that team. A team that didn't necessarily have that much success, only when David Beckham came in. But you mentioned Ronaldo, obviously scoring in this game as well. We actually were talking about him over lunch. And it's interesting the fact that when you talk about the greatest of all time, obviously Messi, Ronaldo, Maradona, but quite a few people bring up Ronaldo at his very peak.
Yeah, he has to be there at the top because, honestly, he's one of those players that you could watch for hours every single time that he was on the ball. I mean, the tricks, the drills, the facility to go 1v1, to take people, to take players out, it was just amazing. And when he was one-on-one with the keeper, he could do anything. He was powerful, he got speed, he was strong, so he had everything. And unfortunately for football fans, he got injured many times and we couldn't see it for more years.
You were saying, what was your first season?
Yeah, I've never seen a player, this is obviously entirely personal, but I've never felt a player have that much impact on me that Ronaldo did that year. It was the first season that I lived in Spain, 96-97, living in Oviedo. And Ronaldo turns up in Spain and I hadn't heard of him, to be honest. And I didn't know who this guy was that had come from Holland. And he turns up in Spain and you start watching him and you think, I've never seen anything like it. The ability to mix the technical quality with really quite brutal power and speed. There was that lovely line that Jorge Valdano came up with when he said, when Ronaldo attacks, it's like an entire herd is attacking, because he would just sort of run through you. And in particular, I remember a game against Valencia where two defenders closed in on him and he just went boom through the middle of them. It was like going through the doors on a subway train, you know, pushing them aside. And you just couldn't stop him. Just couldn't stop him. And I still think it's a tragedy that he didn't stay at Barcelona that year. There was problems with his renewal of his contract, problems with his agent, and he ended up going to Inter Milan and he didn't want to go.
Right.
And I feel that given how young he was and given how good he'd been, had he held on for 3, 4, maybe 5 years at Barcelona, I think we'd have a very different view of him.
Ali, you've gone, obviously we've talked about this a lot before.
Yeah.
If we were to have a pick-up game, pick up the Clasico ball, you had one pick of all the players that have ever played.
Ronaldo would be my number one pick, and this is assuming that we're going to get the very best of all those players. He would be the guy, and it's that mix of power, strength, speed, and then ball skill. His ability with his feet in tight spaces over long distances. I had a very good seat watching Ronaldo play with the Venezuelan national team against Brazil, and let me tell you, it is special to see how people just bounce off of him.
Right.
How, if he wanted to run through you, he could do it. If he wanted to run around you, he could do it. If he wanted to finish with his left foot, he was going to do it. If it was going to be the right foot, he was going to do it. It was up to him. You were just there hoping to make it somewhat difficult for him. But it was the willingness of Ronaldo to take you on, you had zero chance.
just going back to the game, Lewis, obviously we laugh about it, but from someone who grew up dreaming of playing for Barcelona, getting your opportunity to play against Real Madrid in one of the biggest games in the world, what's that feeling like in the second half where you have to sit there and watch everything play out, knowing that, that you didn't have the impact?
The knives really are out tonight, aren't they? No,
thanks, Steph, for bringing me back those feelings.
Was that a good feeling?
No, I'm just doing it because
I understand what you mean, and it's frustrating. And sometimes it's not only for you because you are having a bad time, you just been replaced and you are sitting down, like you say, one of the biggest. Is because in those moments you remember your family, your friends, that they are watching you, waiting for you to be there, and you feel like that you laid them down because at the end you are not there. You didn't perform enough well to continue on into the game. Well, that's what you think. At the end, the coach came and said, listen, I make the change because I wanted something different and blah, 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 whatever you want to say to the player to make him feel well. But it's true that it was very frustrating and it's painful, I have to say, because it's one of the biggest games that you think that you can play, and I was desperate to be in it.
And then just to carry on with this salt in the wound.
Okay.
What was it like afterwards the next couple of days? Because if it was me, I just wouldn't want to go out, because I know anywhere I'd go, people would want to talk to me about the game, and that'd be the last thing in the world that I would want to discuss to anybody.
But that's not only for 2 days. It's like for a couple of weeks easily. Yeah. So at the end, when you're on the screen, you play against a Clásico. If you win, you're going to go away.
I wouldn't change out of the kit. It's like Frank LeBeuf, he still wears his 98 kit everywhere.
You stay at home for as much as you can and don't like to talk about it, not with the people, not with family or anything, because at the end, trust me, it's very painful, and whatever you want to do is just to play another game to try to put away those moments.
Well, let's make it more painful then.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, What about the time that you were supposed to start? What happened then?
it's true. I thought you didn't want to get it.
No, I did.
So this was 2004, obviously, same scene later on.
It's second half of the season. And again, I have the chance, and I'm going to bring the whole story. I was going to go with the national team. That week I was called. It was my first time. Well, actually, my second. The first one, I got injured. I couldn't play when I was playing for Atletico. And that was my second. So I said, fantastic. National team, playing in 11 starter at the weekend. On Saturday, we are doing set pieces. I make the run. I was the one making the run to make the world passes with Xavi, and I pulled my groin. So no national team, no El Clásico on Sunday. I mean the next day. So if it was painful, the first one, yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Barcelona, of course, winning that game.
Yeah,
Ronaldinho in that game. You were there the first season that Ronaldinho came. What was that like?
For me, you were Ronaldo. For me, was Ronaldinho is the player who I would put on the top of the top. During those 5-6 years, we saw the best Ronaldinho. I mean, there is no other player that I've seen do what he could do. Anything at all. I mean, in the training, friendly games, in a rondo, in any single place that he was on the ball, he was just amazing. Because he brought the same like Ronaldo, the strength, the speed, the power, but always with a smile on his face. I mean, he was laughing at the players they were around him. But, I mean, bad. I mean, he was having the ball. You come to me, okay, come again. And he was like a rock, like a big mountain, keeping the ball. And then when he was in front of you, he could do anything because he used to like, he was one of those special ones who started the freestyle, making all these tricks and trails with the ball. He was like one of the first one. And it was just amazing just to be on the field with him.
From that first training session, did everyone look around and go, wow.
Well, what is him? Yeah, because like Ronaldo, we didn't know much about him. I mean, he came from PSG and he was a young player. So yeah, it was good. But something with Ronaldinho is that he came like, he was a thin guy, not small because it's like 182 or something like that. But suddenly, like 3-4 months, he became like a monster. I mean, massive, massive legs and body and shoulders and everything. In just a few months, and he became like so strong, so quick. Suddenly, from one day to another, and he was surprising every single one of us.
What's your Ronaldinho?
He was just the best player in Spain by a very, very long way for about 3 years. And did things, I think that's it, it was the silliness of it. It was, you watched him and it was actually silly. You watched him and thought, you shouldn't even be trying that, let alone actually succeeding in doing it. The, you know, things like passing with his back, the what the Spanish describe as the elastica, the movement of the ankle, which was just extraordinary, flipping the ball over people's heads, and then when they turn in to get it, go, oh, I'm going to go back again now. There's one against Osasuna, I think it is, where he goes over and back Bolly. Again. The goal that he scored at, what was it, 5 minutes past one in the morning?
Yeah, Sevilla.
Barcelona played against Sevilla late at night because of an argument about the fixture list. So they kicked off at 5 minutes past midnight, and he scores this unbelievable goal from about 4 million miles away that thrashes in off the bar. He was just incredible. And it's the fun element that goes with it. You know, the doing the surfy gesture, all of that stuff. He was a cartoon figure.
Yeah, he's the only player who put up to a standing ovation at the Bernabeu. That's something special. I mean, you see that he got the ball, scored goals for fun, and suddenly the Bernabeu start up and start clapping. It was just amazing. I mean, for me, it's one of the best moments of El Clásico.
Yeah, I think so. We were talking about that just yesterday, weren't we? That standing ovation, obviously, it was number one goal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In your top 10 goals. And I think as a football fan, how can you watch this player and not enjoy it? How does he not put a smile on your face?
A smile on your face and the appreciation of a true genius of the game. A guy who, while he's smiling, he's also killing you, right? He's smiling, all right? He's enjoying himself, but you're not. You're not, because of the quality and talent of the player. And so then people ask the question, well, what could he have been had he not gone and party as much as he did? Well, maybe this is sort of what went on with him in his head, that he needed this.
Yep.
He needed that part of his life so that then he can express himself on the field. Now, it sounds all very convenient, and it sounds like, oh, I'm just trying to reason away some of the things that Ronaldinho did off the field. But the truth is that if partying was going to help him do the things that he did for Barcelona in the manner in which he did, and obviously we have heard it from Luis, then go ahead and party, man.
Yeah.
You do you, and come out here and entertain us the way that he did, because he was outstanding.
Yeah, kind of how demoralizing was that? Because you knew what he was doing, you knew the parties, you knew he was staying up late, then he comes into training, does all the tricks, does everything around, you're like...
There is one time that I arrived, we play with Panathinaikos, I think it was, and not Panathinaikos, it was with Atletico Madrid. And at the end of the game, I want to say hi to the players and everything. They killed us, actually. And I went there, and it was lying down in the bathtub, hot, warm bathtub, that is normally not something that you are going to do after the game, because what you get is cold bath, not a warm bath. And he was lying down, and I look at him and say, how are you? Everything okay? I'm just recovering. And that's the way he recovered, with the hot water, something that probably no other player can do and play after three days. But it's kind of the other side of recovering. But that's the way it was. I mean, you need to understand sometimes that these special players need a special treatment for his body to recover, and probably because of here, because that's the way their minds work. If I'm happy here and I'm fine here, on the field, I'm going to be the best.
Yeah, go to YouTube, look up old Ronaldinho clips, Ronaldo clips as well, Moreno clips.
Yeah.
Quite short.
Find those if you can.
Just a reminder, we are here, of course, all week counting down to El Clásico, which is live and exclusive on ESPN Plus on Sunday. Our coverage will start at 9 a.m. Eastern on ESPN2, and then we'll switch to Plus for the game, so be sure to stay with us. But for now, back to you in the studio, Kay.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
El Clasico preview show simulcast between ESPN2 and ESPN Plus. Coverage starts at 9 a.m. Eastern from Barcelona. Make sure to check that one out to bring you all the build-up to the big game, which kicks off at 10 Eastern on ESPN Plus. But that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. We are going to go and get some rest ahead of what's going to be a massive weekend. But stick around. We're going to head back to Barcelona, where Dan and the guys will bring us tonight's extra time. See you later.
Well, welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. We remain on our incredible set here, looking over the skyline of Barcelona. But despite the beautiful view, unfortunately, we welcome you slightly down, because we've been let down. And I don't think there's any other word for it, Zali.
Yeah.
24 hours ago, we asked Pablo Zabaleta for the best place to eat in Barcelona. Made a call, Bosch, sort us out, and we had, didn't we say, beautiful meal?
We ate very well.
Luis, do you think maybe you could find a nice restaurant for us?
Because he played here.
Oh, it's Friday. No one's going to be available.
What?
I'll make a couple of calls.
What?
Nothing. That's it.
Half-hearted effort.
Yeah, it's disappointing, Luis.
I did a good job anyway.
Well, then, yeah, we're relying on me to find a restaurant.
Oh, let's see what happens. Right, Sid, do you think any La Liga team has the chance to win the Champions League this year? And who is this year's favourite, according to you?
No. Oh, I don't think a La Liga team will win the Champions League this year. Favourites, Man City.
Luis, do you want to chip in?
Yeah, Man City, Liverpool. And yeah, I agree with Sid. I think they are struggling. I think physically, still away, far away from English teams and German teams.
Mm. Luis, what about this for a question?
No,
here we go. Get ready.
Here we go. Jesus.
Best player at their prime? Raul, Fernando Torres, or David Villa?
For me, David Villa.
Really?
Yeah. I think I love to. I had the chance to play with him in the national team, and he was just outstanding. I mean, quick, so clever, the movements, always ready to receive the ball, always focused on the goal, and left foot, right foot, very good in the air. It was fantastic. And for me, it's true that Raul is one of our classics. In the classic, of course, Fernando Torres was for quite a few years the best player in Europe or the best striker in Europe. But I think David Villa showed that he was just probably one of the best Spanish strikers in the history.
Agree?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And to add something to it, I think underrated.
Mm.
I still think not talked about as much as he probably deserves to be.
Ali, you agree?
I would say, as dominant as Fernando Torres was in his very best with Liverpool, I would take Fernando Torres. And it's just the physicality of this game. Now, part of that is the fact that I agree with Sid, is that David Villa is underrated and doesn't come up in as many conversations as he should, as one of the great players for Spain and Barcelona, for that matter, and of course Valencia. But to me, I just think the physicality of Fernando Torres and his very best with Liverpool, he was outstanding.
Have you seen Fernando Torres these days?
Yeah, well, talk about physicality.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Should I change my... Because I'm going to see him probably in Madrid, so should I say my statement?
given the state of it, I think you probably should.
Luis, you work out a lot. We see you on Instagram.
I can't do that.
You don't want to go for that, no?
Yeah, I'm not going to be...
No.
You're busy, by the way. If you follow him on Instagram, well, you're in Mexico, went to Liverpool, ran a triathlon. I had two naps. That was my success.
You've used your time really well, Dan.
That's my achievement. If you had to put together a starting 11 from each of the big leagues, so your best players from each league, Italy, France, Spain, England, Germany, who would have the strongest side?
Wow.
Well, the Premier League team, probably.
Yeah?
Probably.
But then you would throw in Messi and Mbappe.
That's the thing.
That lot would get in...
Yeah, and you've got Haaland in Germany, and you've got Lewandowski in Germany.
Yeah.
Still probably the Premier League.
Yeah.
Agree, yeah. Yeah, because at the end, you got all those players in just Paris Saint-Germain. That's it. And so you have to pick from...
Yeah, that's
true. And in Premier League, you got so many good talents all around the lines. Yeah.
You don't get excited about Burak Yılmaz?
Oh.
No? Oh, that doesn't get your blood flowing?
Start. The anti-Burak.
I know, I'm just saying.
Rhetoric,
you guys, somehow you can't find players in Liga, huh? Come on.
Sid, will Xavi take over from Koeman if Barca lose El Clasico?
No. I think Xavi will become Barcelona manager at some point, but I don't think it's imminent.
You see how definitive Sid is?
No, but I like that. Yeah. No faffing.
No
Marcotti ramble. Good. There it is.
Marcotti ramble.
What was it like growing up with Xavi?
I mean, the same way that you've seen him end his career with the touch, and probably he could still be playing in his team, actually, probably managing and playing at the same time. It was fantastic, because what I love the most about Xavi is that he has never changed the way he behaves. I mean, inside and outside the field, he's just an amazing guy. And what he was on the field, he was always positive. Always. You never seen Xavi complaining or being one of those, oh, come on, we cannot do this. Or always positive, always wanted the ball, always being supportive to the teammates. So it was just fantastic. And yeah, at a certain point, hopefully, we can see him.
Destined to be a coach? Did you always kind of have that feeling that he was going to be a manager one day?
We all thought, I mean, he was a study guy when he was very young. I mean, he used to watch every single game. He was on TV. He was analyzing players. He used to know everything about every player in Europe. So at the end, probably, yeah, you never know what is going to happen when you retire. But now that when he started doing the coaching budget, yeah, we thought, yeah, it's going to be good.
Luis, you were there when Edgar Davids turned up.
Yep.
And that changed everything for Xavi.
Yeah.
Why did that make such a big difference? I mean, Xavi becomes the Xavi we know when Davids turns up halfway through that season.
Yeah, because he doesn't need to start defending. He suddenly released himself. I mean, he was a player who has to run back and run forward and get the ball, and he was running around. You've seen Xavi, he wants to help every single player on the field, because he knows what is happening every single corner on the field. So comes to you, ask that, give me the ball, I'm going to give it to him, and then that's when I move, I'm going to receive the ball, but I have to defend. And with David, it's like, okay, now you're free to receive the ball whatever you want, don't need to go back, and then you can use that movement, that technical ability, is go the view in proper places up front, when he can receive, turn and play with the players up front, because at the back he's not a quick player, we all know he's not a big lad, and so he needs to be over there in the other pitch to create chances.
Yeah, I always felt that season that the arrival of Davids, we talked about Ronaldinho, there were lots of good players in that team, but the arrival of Davids was the key to everything, and all of a sudden, oh, this will make sense.
We never lost a game in the second part of the season.
Yeah. Did you play?
Mm. A little bit more than
Fair question.
What does the crew think about a World Cup every 3 years, allows for a Euro and a Copa America to happen in the two gap years, and works as a perfect compromise between the 2 and 4 year debate? Where do you stand on all this, Luis?
I don't have a FIFA commission or a European commission. At the end, it's about something. Sometimes about the players, thinking a little bit about what is going to happen with them. All the things that we have to change, or everything is going to change in the European competition. We all love the Euros. We all love Champions League. We all love the FIFA World Cup. When you think that in this kind of situation, everything is going to change, it's like, oh, come on. I love the way it is. I enjoy knowing that we are going to have a World Cup in 3 years. So I want to look for that. I don't want to have, again, another one. So I think it's not too much football. I think there's a lot of football and good enough to continue changing it.
Too much?
I think it's based on a myth. I think the idea of a World Cup every 2 years, a bit like the idea of a Super League, is based on myth. And that myth is, this is terrible, we need to change it. It's not terrible. What we need to change maybe is too many games for the players, but this is doing the complete opposite. It's, let's go and do more. Let's go and do more of the big thing. And the failure, I think, to see that it's partly the scarcity that makes the big things big. It's the scarcity that makes them seem great. I, in principle, don't have a problem with a World Cup every 2 years, if it is a World Cup every 2 years, and that's it. But if you've got a World Cup every 2 years, what do you do with the Euros and the Copa America and the African Cup of Nations? That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Venezuela not qualifying for a World Cup every 2 years instead of every four? Is
that... I don't care. Even if this meant that Venezuela was going to go to a World Cup, I still don't like it. And I tell you, it cheapens the product and it takes away the magic of the World Cup tournament.
For Luis, what's your best memory of playing in the ISL?
Yes.
Now, for those people, what's the ISL for those people?
ISL is the Indian Super League that it was played. It was started in 2014, that I had the chance to go in there with ATK, Atletico de Kolkata. And yes, fantastic memories, because moving there to India, an amazing experience with the culture. The people was just fantastic. Playing in front of 80,000 people at the first, at the opening ceremony, was just beautiful. We had the chance of winning. I was playing by then.
Good.
That's all wrong. Did you lose?
No, not in that one. We won in that one. It was great memories from ISL.
Ali, after seeing your talent for drawing fouls, if Stevie played against you, could you get him booked and suspended?
Absolutely.
This is Stevie, of course, was never suspended, never got a red card.
Yeah, well, but he could not stand playing against me.
Right.
No. He would call me a cheater and a few other things and things that I wouldn't understand.
Because he's Scottish.
Yes, absolutely. And yes, he would get booked. And I think in a 90-minute time period, I could get him thrown off the field.
You think so? You can wind him up enough?
Oh, yeah. Just my presence winds him up on a daily basis. You kidding me?
Final question. Whoa. Sid, if you could hang out in a Mallorca cabana sipping Primo Carver with any coach, past or present, from La Liga, who would it be?
Wow. What a question.
Wow, what a question.
Goodness me.
I'm going to need some time to think about this.
Well, it's the last question, Sid. It's extra time, not extra time, John.
You know what? I feel like I would like to spend time with Luis Aragonés, who was completely nuts at times, but fascinating and very, very unusual and very different to other people and very clear in his own mind. So, yeah, maybe Luis Aragonés.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great choice.
Yeah.
Great choice. Fantastic history. You will laugh a lot, I have to tell you. Brilliant stories.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
Who would you have, Luis? Who would you want to?
Actually, it could be a good one. Yeah. Because you can talk about
you can
football.
Come with me
but
if you want.
sometimes you want to talk
to book the dinner.
You're not going to get the cabana.
We call Pablo.
Pablo will get it done.
Thank you very much, guys. As always, just a reminder, of course, we're here counting down to our Clásico, which kicks off on Sunday. Be sure to stay with us, and we'll be back tomorrow for more.